Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another beautiful, beautiful Thursday evening here in Southern California. And we are sitting here atop the 36-story building downtown Sherman Oaks, California, looking over across at Notre Dame High School.
I think you said Notre Dame High School.
I did. Yes. I'm Woodman. Oh, lovely school. I am Jim Christina, your host. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. And this, of course, is The Writer's Block. I am in studio tonight with a fill-in co-host, a guest co-host. He's been on the show a couple times, and he is an outstanding writer of science fiction and all things kind of on the weird.
That's one way to say it.
We're gonna go with weird tonight, Richard. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Richard Polinelli.
Hey, thanks for the welcome. Happy to be here. It's a little different setting for me. I'm on the other side of the table tonight.
Usually you are, yeah. Now you get to sit. We actually get to look at my ugly face.
Well, that, and I've got a really nice view of the planes coming in for a landing at Burbank Airport.
Oh, so, yeah.
It's great up here.
What else can you ask for? You know, the flight path is in the way of the space station.
Yeah, that, and the pilots are waving at us, so that's kind of nice, too.
All right, let's get started. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing. Black Dog, the folks there that will help you out if you're a new writer. If you don't know what you're doing or trying to figure out how to go through the publishing or the business or put things together or proofread or edit or any of that, formatting your story, give us a call at Black Dog. The number there is 805-795-3165, and we can put that together for you or give you a hand. And we don't charge you a dime until everything is finished, so, and you're happy with it. So try that. Give us a call, 805-795-3165, and buy Out West Boutique. And Out West is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather, Rockmount Ranch Wear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Give them a call direct at 661-347-9700, or their concert series number is 877-340-9378, and they have a concert every fourth Friday. Bobby Jean should have been here tonight. Of course, she is attending a class, so she is unable to be here, which is why Richard's here with me. And, of course, our last but not least, our very favorite advertiser is Target Freight Management. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM, or Target Freight Management, also provides unmatched customer support from our dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline our customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today, 844-653-7789, and talk to Mike Matruski. He's the guy that can help you out. He's really good at what he does, and he's a really nice guy. Tell him you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, we know that you're looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Give Target Freight a call. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. You won't be sorry. And I talked to Mike the other day, and they are, of course, renewing their contract with us for another 10 weeks, which is excellent. We like that. It's fun. Richard, good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Good. And I get to see you again on the 22nd of April.
Yes, you do.
Yes, at the Cowboy Festival for 5 hours. You're going to be at the Cowboy Festival at the Buckaroo Bookshop from 10 to 3, I believe.
Yeah.
And you'll be bringing some of your tomes with you.
Yeah, I'll have four different books with me, and people can come by, and I'll be more than happy to sign them for you, too.
Excellent. And, of course, they need to pay for them.
That's true. That's kind of the given. You know,
let's not forget the obvious.
Yeah, Christmas was back in December. Yeah.
The Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival is April 22nd, 23rd of this year. It's a Saturday and Sunday. This festival is open from 10 to 6 daily. I personally will be there the same hours as Richard on Saturday from 10 to 3, but I will be there all day Sunday from 10 to between 5 and 6. So come on out, stop by, talk to us. There's a lot of authors going to be around there. And it's just going to be a great time, and it always is. And they got the best peach cobbler and fresh coffee. Oh, it's to die for.
I'm gonna warn them right now. They need to make an extra pan of the peach cobbler and just bring it to me.
Okay, that'll work.
With a big bowl of whipped cream and a small Diet Coke. I gotta watch the calories.
They have the runners that will bring. If you want a pan of cobbler, they will bring you a pan of cobbler.
Yeah, because you bring me a bowl, that's a sample.
I like it. Okay, tonight's guest, we're going to get right into her pretty quick here. Tonight's guest is an Oklahoma native. She was born and raised in western Oklahoma and grew up traveling on Route 66. Ooh. She spent the majority of her life in various towns in Ouachita and Custer County, Oklahoma, except for a brief time of residence in Wyoming. She received a Bachelor of Arts in English Education in 1988 from Southwestern Oklahoma State University, graduating summa cum laude, and has since pursued a teaching career. She actually is a teacher now, and she teaches. I'm going to have her tell you where she teaches because I think there's, all of six students there. She currently is completing her 23rd year of teaching in a rural school, and we say rural, we mean rural, in Southwestern Oklahoma, where she teaches English and art and is a yearbook advisor. She also has a background in journalism, having served as a women's editor for the Clinton Daily News, Clinton, Oklahoma, a columnist and stringer for the Woodward News, Woodward, Oklahoma, and as a feature writer and contributing editor for the Casper Star Tribune and the Casper Journal, Casper, Wyoming, respectively. She also writes poetry. I mean, God. I know, I'm dumbfounded. She also writes poetry and has her work published in Westview Magazine. She is an avid amateur genealogist, draws portraits of people whose faces she finds endlessly fascinating. She will not be drawing here any tonight.
I hope not.
Okay. And has been active in community theater as an actress and director, as well as singing in local community choirs. A Far Journey, which is the name of her book. Would you please welcome to the writer's block Ruth Ramsey. Ruth, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Did you like that? You wrote that bio.
Yes, I did. I wrote it.
Yes, you did. And you can tell that you're an English major.
Yes, I am an English major.
Yeah, me too, actually. English and history.
I'm sorry.
I said me too, actually, English and history.
English and history.
Right.
Well, the kids tell me that I should have been a history teacher because they love the story of King Henry VIII and how he had seven wives and chopped off their heads. He just loves that.
Not
they
all
just
of
love
them.
That. Not all of them.
Yeah, I didn't think he killed them all, just a lot of them.
No. And I'll say, well, Anne Boleyn got a fell of him and he chopped off her head. They like that.
There you go. Know. So tell us what
it's
town
very
it is.
Condensed history.
Tell us what town it is that you teach again, because I looked it up on the map and I couldn't find it.
It's a little bitty town in southwest Oklahoma, and it's called Lone Wolf.
Lone Wolf, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. It was named after a Kiowa chief.
Really? Now,
yes.
See, I would have thought of it named after Chuck Norris.
No, it was named after a Kiowa chief. I think there were two, at least, if I got my history right.
And Lone Wolf, he was a Comanche, yeah? Yeah.
No, he was Kiowa.
Oh, Kiowa. Yeah, but they were like Comanche
Kiowa
family. Anyway, let's get to your book, A Far Journey.
All right.
This is your first novel.
Yes, it is.
And it was quite interesting to read your take on the blended families of the 50s and 60s. I was quite impressed with how you did that.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. There's a few characters in here, Anne Marie being the protagonist of the story, I suppose that's what you could call her.
Yes, yes. Who we teach protagonists.
Correct.
We don't have heroes and heroines
right.
anymore.
Right, protagonist and antagonist, yeah. She's 14. She's dealing with her mother's death and her father's remarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And she definitely has a chip on her shoulder and an attitude.
She's your typical 14-year-old girl.
But reading this, I almost got the sense that she was a little worse.
Very well.
Yeah. I almost got the sense.
I did at 14, too.
Yeah, well, I almost got the sense that she was a little worse than your normal 14-year-old. But, you know, I may
be wrong. She's dealing with grief.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Grief makes you deal differently with things.
That's true.
And to lose a mother at a young age would create anger and sadness. And then, of course, Dad goes off and gets married real quickly, and
right.
that creates another whole situation that she's dealing with.
Well, yeah, because now she feels abandoned.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just kind of a slice of life. Read it to my kids over the years as I wrote it, and I taught for a while at a treatment facility, and I started writing, and of course the first four chapters came out really quickly, and I was sitting and editing it while the kids worked one day, and one of the boys said, what are you doing? And I said, I started a book. He said, you did? And I said, can I read it? And I said, sure. And as fast as I could edit it, he was reading it. And even though this was a little girl, he was very interested in it. And my kids at school, you know, you test read it with the kids.
Sure.
And they always wanted more. And in fact, one little boy, what inspired me to finish it, he came back, and it was a few years after he graduated, and he said, did you ever finish that book? And I said, well, no, because I was very busy with life. And he said, you ought to. It's good. And I thought, yeah, I ought to. And so I thought, well, I'm going to finish it. And I did. And the end result is this, A Far Journey.
A Far Journey.
And it's called A Far Journey because it's a long journey back from grief.
Can be. That is absolutely correct.
Ruth, what grade levels do you teach usually?
I teach 7th through 12th, okay. And I do have more than 6 students.
I told you this was not going to be a real irreverent interview.
Well, I was wondering how much of your experience with the kids at those different ages played into the writing of this book. Did you draw from any of your students at all?
Well, I don't know. Not really. I just know a lot of children in my life, it's just kind of an amalgam of what I've seen and observed and done. I've raised 2 sets of children. You know, I had my grown children, and then I had grandchildren growing up, helped raise them and babysat them. And then, of course, I've taught for many years. I've taught 23 years there at Lone Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And just seen a lot of children go through, and I've seen children go through grief and things like that. And I don't know, she just kind of evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And took on a life of her own.
So she's more a composite than anything.
She's more of a composite of children. She's not any one child, but she's all children.
So here I thought it was you.
And people ask me if it's an autobiography. No, I was an only child.
Well, see, now I have to scratch that question off.
Off it goes. One thing I noticed when I was reading it, you did a very good job with all the characters, making it where you could identify with the characters, but at the same time you could still be mad at them when they were doing certain things. Like you could be upset with the dad for going out and remarrying so quickly, but then you can understand why he did, and you could empathize with that. And that was the one thing that struck me with this book, is you hit a balance with your characters that it's hard to do.
Well, thank you. I tried.
Well, you really did.
I spent many years polishing and fixing and tweaking, and, you know, being an English teacher, you tend to do that. You want it perfect. and so I tried to do the best I could with them and make them where they would be realistic. We, you know, we teach round characters in English, and I really think that all of my characters could step out of the book and be round and have those many sides to their characters. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to hear I achieved that.
Well, you did. And, you know, Richard being a writer and myself being a writer, I think what I like to gauge my characters on more than anything is the fact that I like to be able to take my characters and take them out of that story and put them in any story and they would fit. Or they would be able to hold their own in any other book.
Well, I hope these could. Excuse me. I have frog. Speaking of frogs, Johnny loves frogs. So.
Yes, he does. Shows them to everybody.
Yep.
Boy, he was a piece of work, that kid.
Yes. The only real character in the book, and I will give you this little tidbit, the little man who ran the train. Now, the train is a real thing that was in Clinton, and the little man who ran the train in that book was my dad.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a real little train, and it had steam, and it took 40 pounds of coal a day to run it.
Holy mackerel.
And my daddy was this little bitty skinny man, and I can still see him carting those big old things of coal. But you've seen the old steam engines.
Oh, sure.
And the old westerns. And
sure.
Yes, it was a little bitty miniature steam train, and it was so cool to ride on.
Is that the one where the engineers used to have to sit with their legs on either side of the, because they were the train was so small?
Well, they had little green metal cars in it, and they had little red seats. And you're little, you don't fold up too bad.
Sure.
You know, now big people didn't get in it very much, but the little ones rode in it, and I think, you know. I spent a lot of time, you know, probably if that had not about the screams, but when Daddy would put the train up and at night in the scary tunnel, it ran in a little circle on a track, and he would back it around to put it up.
Uh-huh.
And I would pile on the back of it and ride with him. I would go down and you know, play in the park and swim in the pool while he worked. But anyway, that was my little tribute to my dad.
Oh.
Well, you know, it's usually those little things that you add in that are personal to the writer that make the stories that much better, even though the reader doesn't really know the full backstory behind why it's in there.
Right.
And that's something I've tried to do, too, and it to me, it makes it a better story.
Yeah, you need to have some realistic touches in a
you do.
Real story. Now, if you're writing fantasy and you've got witches and warlocks and demons, you can be fantasize all you want to, but you need to have some reality in your story. And I just like to call my book a slice of life.
Yeah, well, you made it.
Well, thank you.
Now, Richard, did you hear that, right?
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay, story, demons, warlocks.
I'm making notes. I'm making notes, trust me. I have a book coming up. I might have to sneak some of that in, so I'm jotting it down.
If you haven't read anything of Richard Polinelli's, you may want to go onto Amazon and pick up one or two. They are really, he writes some really strange things.
Oh, well, I'm not averse to fantasy. I wrote realism, but I'm not averse to fantasy. It's good escapism.
Well, his very last book was actually my very favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't go full fantasy on that one. There's a little science behind my madness there.
He actually researches what he writes.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like you did too, because you growing up in Oklahoma, you knew the mores and the mores and the morals of the time in the 50s and the 60s in Oklahoma. You knew what people acted like and what they were like, and I mean, mm-hmm. coming home with a brand new station wagon, I can remember what that was like when I was a kid.
Oh, I remember traveling from Pueblo, Colorado, down to Gallup, New Mexico, in a Rambler station wagon.
Oh my gosh.
With a very small child and a puppy and my aunt and her friend, and you really had to floorboard it to get up over that path.
I'm sure.
You know?
I'm sure.
Being pretty high.
I was one of five kids, and we drove from North Dakota to California. We were going to the Philippines. My dad was in the Air Force. and we drove up over the Rockies, and the Tetons went through Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah.
And I spent the entire time underneath a quilt in the back of the station wagon because heights just still to this day scare the crap out of me.
Well, I was telling my students today, it's funny that you mentioned Yellowstone because we were reading Samuel Pepys' diary in senior English, and we were talking about Yellowstone. And we went several times when our children were young, and the kids said, well, you should go back there. And I said, well, it's on my bucket list. And I said, but someone will have to drive me because there are roads up there where there is nothing between you and down but clear blue sky.
That's exactly right. They have a horse pack train up there that you are just, there's virtually, it's a 4 foot or 6 foot wide trail on the side of a mountain.
My. I couldn't do that.
Oh, no. Me either. And I'm a horseman, and I couldn't do it. Yeah. So.
Oh, my.
Anyway, back to your book.
Well, you would love it out here. We have lots of horses
I've been
cattle.
Out there.
Where I teach is a rural school.
Yeah.
And we're surrounded on all sides by wheat farms, and cattle are grown. And the town I live in fact, I have an open field across from my house. And when I drive to work, you know, you might commute 25 miles in L.A. and have to fight traffic. Here we dodge tractors and combines and the occasional cow. So it's quite different.
Yeah. I can see. You know how far I drive to go to work?
How far do you drive?
I get up, I get my coffee, and go in my office.
Oh, well, you drive a long way.
I do. I do. That's and I good. Sit in there and I write all day. And then I read you guys' books, and I prefer for shows on Thursday nights, and that's my whole life now.
That's good to make your vocation. What is it my professor used to tell us in college? Make your avocation your vocation.
Your vocation. That is correct. That is correct. Well, I have a little. We have a little publishing company called Black Dog, that's I do that on the side too. But I mean, mostly I write books. So there you have it.
Mm-hmm. You write westerns, don't you?
I do.
Oh, yes. My dad was like the Western person. He read Westerns nonstop and True West and Old West and all those.
My tagline is, if you're looking for Louis L'Amour, you're not going to find him here.
Well, I don't know. It was Zane Grey with him. So
yeah, same thing. Zane Grey.
Any Western author, you know, that wrote about the Old West because he really liked the Old West and everything. He was able to tell you anything about the Old West if you wanted to know.
So tell me, what got you started, interested in writing, and what got you started in penning this tome that you've written called The Far Journey?
Oh, I don't know. I always wrote little stories when I was little, and I don't know. I was more of a nonfiction writer, you know, when I wrote for the papers and such like as that. And then I wrote columns. I'd write a humorous column now and then. But I don't know. This just came to me, and I sat down and started writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was stuck for a while. You know, if you talk about, I'm on writer's block. I had writer's block.
Well, that's a question we will be asking you, but I'll just go ahead and ask it right now. You've had writer's block. How do you get out of it?
I just finally just sat down and wrote. Usually you just have to write and write till you figure out something to go. But I'm one of these writers that if I sit down in front of a keyboard and I force it, nothing comes.
Right.
And it cooks in the back of my mind, and then, you know, it'll just come out and write. And so that's pretty much how this one did. And, of course, it took me, you're going to die when you hear this, but it took me almost 15 years to write this because I was too busy dealing with life to sit down and write it. And during that time period, I was teaching full-time and helping with my grandchildren. I had 5 grandchildren that I was helping to raise and babysitting for. And to give you an idea, I have, with my step-grandchildren, I have 18 grandchildren. And so I was a very busy lady.
Christmas must be crazy at your house.
So the book kind of got set on the back burner, and so I'm sitting there a couple of summers ago, and this young boy had said, you need to finish it. Yeah, I need to finish it. So by golly, I want to finish it. So I sat down, and by golly, I made myself finish it. And so I really don't know what the recipe is. I would say just don't try to force it. Don't get all upset if you don't know what to write, because then that creates more writer's block with you. So just sit down and start writing something.
Yeah, just move away from where
not even your book or whatever it is you're working. Write something else.
Sure.
Or put it on the back burner of your mind and, you know, go out and enjoy something. Let your subconscious work on it.
There you go.
I was just going to tell.
That's kind of the way I operate. I've started a new book. It's called Dreams of Dust.
Okay.
And I'm about 59 pages in, and, of course, I'm a very busy teacher. I had 34 pages of your book to get in, and just been really, really busy here lately, and so I haven't really done anything, but I'm sure that when I sit down, it will begin to flow.
Is this the same characters?
These characters are taking on a life of their own. And
so same characters?
I'm sorry?
Same characters?
No, this one's quite different.
Okay.
This one's very different, and it's written from three first-person points of view and rotates through the characters.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. That's a little rough to do.
Difficult to write.
Yeah, Richard's over here nodding. Yeah.
I had a great time
and
trying to alternate between third and first.
Because it's going to be set at the end of the Dust Bowl around 1941.
Okay.
And so I'm having to do a little research on, well, what did they eat and what did they wear and how was life then and, you know, what was the weather like where I'm setting my book?
Uh-huh.
And so I have to kind of look at that more than I did the 60s. I lived through the 60s. I was duck soup, you know.
Well.
But I don't know that the mores and manners of the 40s were much different than those of the 60s. And, of course, it was really different back then. You know, I remember being sent off to church on Easter. We wore gloves, and we had our little dresses, and we had a little handkerchief that we fold very nicely pressed, and we put that in our Bible. And on Mother's Day, we wore red roses if our mothers were living, and if our mothers weren't living, we wore white roses.
See, that's a tradition I never knew.
No.
And so I was raised kind of Southern.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's kind of a Southern thing.
Well, Southwestern.
That was a tradition.
Yeah.
Hey, Ruth, I have a question for you. You, in your bio, you say you're an avid genealogist.
Yes, I am.
Does your genealogy, do you find yourself using some things that you might have come across in the research in your books?
Well, I may, in this next one, one of the interesting things is my aunts packed parachutes in Douglas, Arizona during the war effort, and in World War II, and my mother did, and I don't know, maybe I'll write that into my book. I just really haven't figured out what they're going to do yet. I know that I have the main thread of the storyline, and it's developing into a theme, but I have all these different ways that I want to jump, so I'm just kind of sitting here trying to figure out which hop I'm going to take with it.
How much of the family?
And I haven't gotten very far.
how much of the family tree do you develop before you start writing for your characters?
I just sit down and write.
Just go? Okay.
It just writes. I write off the top of my head. As I said, it cooks in the back of my head, and then, boom, it comes out.
So you don't use any outline or anything like that?
No. Well, if I get an idea, I'll jot it down.
Okay.
Yeah. No,
but I don't outline it.
Okay.
I was bad when I was growing up. You know, I teach my children to do outlines, but I would write an outline, and then I didn't go by it. I won't try to write something.
Well, I think we all do that.
See, I'm bad. I do 4 months of research before I start writing, so, yeah.
Yeah, but Richard's one of these strange people that actually works.
Yeah.
He actually works at writing.
I'm doing a little research on the Dust Bowl and trying to figure out, you know, this is near the end, right before the rains come.
Right.
One thing that's totally stymied me is, what month did the rains come in Oklahoma? When did the drought break?
I don't know.
You know, and it's really hard to find some of that. I need to go to the local library and get on the newspapers and look, because when I worked for the Clinton Daily, excuse me, I have a frog, they had a thing called Down Memory Lane, and I remember reading a little piece by the editor, and he said on his desk he had a black widow spider and some other kind of insect and some other kind of insect, and said that he had not seen them around there much until the Dust Bowl, until the dusty, hot conditions came. And so I thought that was fascinating. I'm going to have to go back through that, because that would have been about 1935.
Right.
Because right. I worked for them in the early 80s. And so, yeah, I need to do that before I, you know, do too much. I'm going to get the bare bones of my story, and then I'll fill in the rich details.
Well, make sure that you mention the Great Migration to Bakersfield and to Oildale, California.
Well, there's a migrant family in there.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, I still have family out there in Bakersfield.
Do you really?
In Oildale. Yes, I do.
Well, I think anybody that's from Oklahoma has family in Bakersfield and Oildale now.
I finally got to go to California. I'd never gone to California. I went to California about 10 years ago and went to Fresno, and I thought, man, this is like Oklahoma West, except it's got mountains around.
So you're talking about Richard's stomping grounds now.
No. The thing with Fresno is Fresno is Oklahoma if Oklahoma went really bad.
Have you been to Oklahoma?
Oh, yeah.
I have been to Oklahoma a few times. I almost wound up moving to Shawnee. And I would take Shawnee in a heartbeat over Fresno.
Yeah. Yes, Shawnee's a nice little town. That's where OBU is, the Oklahoma Baptist University, if I remember right. Or is that Seminole? Maybe it's Seminole.
No, it's
I think it's Seminole. My ignorance is showing here.
I think it's OBU.
I'm having a senior moment.
Well, you can't have one.
Anyway,
I'm not having one, so you can't
OBU
have one either.
Seminole. I think I have that wrong. But Shawnee's a pretty nice town, too.
Can we agree that it's just Oklahoma? Yeah,
we
can just agree that it's all Oklahoma.
Oklahoma's not
all of
that
it's
bad.
Oklahoma, yes.
You know,
yes.
And they say the reason Texas is there is to keep the water off of Oklahoma.
Well, it didn't do a very good job the other night. It rained, and we were going glory hallelujah because we had like three or four years of drought, and we have a little lake called Lake Altus Lugert down in southwest Oklahoma, and it was almost dry.
Uh-huh.
And from the irrigation, the farmers use it to irrigate. And somebody said, it will never be like it was again. And lo and behold, we had gully washers. And it filled right up, and there was water coming over the spillway. You have to like changes in weather if you live in Oklahoma.
Would you like to explain to our 300,000 listeners what a gully washer is?
A gully washer is when it rains and it rains and the water pours and pours and pours and fills up the ditches and the roads and, you know. And I wouldn't say it rains so much here, but I think I saw a couple of frogs in a rowboat going up the street.
Was Johnny chasing him?
I don't know. I think he was talking after. But yes, when we get rain, it rains. It never does anything by half in Oklahoma.
Well, that's
it's
true.
It's windy. We
Texas
have wind.
Too.
You know?
Yeah. I've been in Texas when it was raining so hard you had to pull over because you couldn't see two feet in front of your face.
And I drove home one day like that. It was terrible. And you have to watch for standing water on the road. And
yep.
And I remember when there's some little mountains down south of Lone Wolf where the little treatment facility was, and it's dry.
Mm-hmm.
And down in this area, and there were like 15 or 20 waterfalls coming off the mountains. It was quite a sight to see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever seen that since, but it was one of those heavy, heavy rains that we had. And, of course, then we have tornadoes.
Yeah, you're right there in Tornado Alley, that's for sure.
Yes, yes. And the little town I live in was hit back in the 60s. And I have a very vivid memory of, I think my mother and I drove down here with some neighbors and saw the damage. And we lived in Clinton at that time, and we drove. It's about 23 miles down here.
Mm-hmm.
And from Clinton, and looked at the damage, and I have memories of that.
Well, I remember tornadoes hitting when, you know, I think they aim at trailer parks.
Don't live in a trailer in Oklahoma.
Yeah, or Texas.
Smart thing.
Or Kansas.
Or Texas. No, anywhere where there's a tornado
right.
that can touch down.
Right.
Trailer houses are not good things to live in.
No. No, I'm with you on that one.
And we invested when we bought our house, or we invested in a cellar pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, some people may not know quite what a cellar is. You know, I remember substitute teaching in Wyoming, and the kids didn't know what a cellar was, so I had to tell them what a cellar was. It's a hole in the ground with a door on it, and you get in it when the tornadoes come.
Yeah, the house may be gone, but the cellar's still there.
Yeah, and it was used, you know, canning. People would can things and keep them down in the cellar to keep them cool. And it's just, it's a different way of life out here.
Well, it is. But it's a different way of life everywhere. It's a different way of life here in California and Nebraska.
I think we have a lot more leisurely.
Yeah, you may now.
We can get pretty fast-paced when we make ourselves
good. Oh, wait a minute.
But
what's
in general,
fast-paced in Oklahoma?
More leisurely life. I don't think I could do the traffic in L.A.
Oh, well.
No,
you get used to it after a while.
I do have to say this. A couple of years ago when we flew to Shawnee to see if that's where we're going to be moving, we fly into Oklahoma City. We're getting there about 4:30 in the afternoon local time. The lady sitting next to us looks out the plane window and she goes, "Oh my God, look at that bumper to bumper traffic." I look out and there's 6 car lengths between every car.
Right.
Okay, I come from LA. That ain't bumper to bumper traffic.
Well, I just have to tell you a funny story. I was bringing my grandson home from a doctor's appointment, and we hit rush hour in Oklahoma City. You obviously missed the worst of it. And up to 40, it was just bumper to bumper. I mean, bumper to bumper cars barely moving. So I took off down this side street, and my grandson said, "Grandma, you're taking us through the hood." I said, "Well, we're getting out of here, aren't we?" Of course, we went on through and went on down another road and came out the other side of Oklahoma City away from the worst of the traffic. But it can get hairy there.
I'm sure. So, Ruth, is this going to be another 15, 16 years until this book is done?
Oh, Lord, I hope not. I don't think I will be alive then. Then people will be celebrating me for being like 110, 120.
You're not that old.
Well,
I'm hoping to get some writing done this weekend and, you know, at odds and ends and maybe really hit it this summer.
Well, when's your favorite time to write?
Whenever I want to.
Oh, okay.
I don't have a certain time that I write.
Like
I say, I sandwich it in, and I'm too busy with life to sit down and just force myself to do something.
Uh-huh.
So I sit down and I write when I can, and like it may hit me, and I may write from morning till evening,
mm-hmm.
or I may write an hour or two,
mm-hmm.
or I may write 20 minutes here mm-hmm. and there, but. Basically, when the storyline comes to me,
mm-hmm.
As I said, I have like 58 or 59 pages on my next novel, and I've already got a scenario cooking in my head that I'm going to have to sit down and get down,
mm-hmm.
and it won't take me long to really get after it once I get the things in my head that I want to go in there. But as I said, I just cook them and then I write.
Ah.
But if I'm going to write, it's probably going to be in the evening. After I get through with schoolwork.
Gotcha.
And I don't want to be mentally tired when I write. I want to be fresh and be able to think. Sometimes I come home brain dead. But,
brain dead is not a bad thing sometimes.
No.
Yeah. And I know there are people that sit down and then make themselves write 500 words a day. Well, that would feel really constraining to me.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you can hear my spoiled rotten dog in the background crying. Wants attention.
Oh, yeah.
But I just kind of take it when the mood takes me to write.
Uh-huh.
And then I might write 10 or 15 pages.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote some, I think, last week, and I just wrote maybe 2 or 3 pages. But, excuse me, I'm very new to this. As I said, I write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
More of a poet. I've always been more of a poet than a fiction writer.
And a genealogist.
And a genealogist, yes. And one of the most fascinating things I have found in my genealogy is I am descended from an Alamo defender.
Oh, are you?
Which
total
one?
Total surprise. His name was Jesse B. Bowman.
Wow.
And I didn't know that. And when I started doing the genealogy, I found this out.
Uh-huh.
And the stories are just cool, you know, that you run across.
Well, except we all know how it ended.
Yeah, we know how his did.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of fascinating to find that out, because I wasn't really after trying to find out whether I was a famous person or not. I just wanted to find out where I came from. What got me started was we thought that my great-grandfather Morgan, who was a judge in Arkansas, had some Native American in him, and we were trying to find out whether he was Native American. Well, it turns out he didn't have any Native American in him. He was Welsh. And unless his mother was Native American, but he had come into the Indian Territory and taken a lease from a Native American for $2,000, which was a lot of money back in 1898.
Sure.
And he had written to the Department of Interior about what was he going to do, because they'd passed a no intruder law. He was white. He was considered an intruder, you know. And so he was, I guess he was afraid he'd lose his money. But so these are just really interesting things that you find out in the course of finding out who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so on my dad's side was where I found the Alamo defender, and that just totally blew me away.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I knew nothing about his family.
I would have blown me away too.
So I got a quick question for you. As a genealogist, how much fun is it when you're tracking a family line and you hit the 1890 census, which is missing?
That happened with my grandma.
Yeah.
I don't know where she is.
Really? You did that.
The whole census went up in smoke.
Yeah.
And I think
what didn't go up in smoke, they destroyed.
Yeah.
I think I understand. And so you just kind of have that big gap there that you don't know, you know, what's going on.
Huh.
And it's just really hard. Come here, puppy. You want to go outside? Come here.
We can't leave yet. We're not done with you.
No.
No, I'm just going to put the puppy in there because he's sitting there whining at me.
Gotcha. Well, the book is named A Far Journey. And can you kind of give us an idea of where people can get a hold of you, your email address and Facebook page?
Okay.
And
you can follow me on Twitter at Authorist2016.
Okay.
And I have, there's a page on AskDavid.com where you can read the book and leave a review. The book is available through Amazon.
Okay.
And it's available by special order from Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And at A. Argus Books.
Okay. And Ruth, I thank you for joining us tonight. It's been
a
ball having you on.
Natter on.
There you go. Thanks so much again. Have a good time. Enjoy that coffee mug.
Oh, I will. I will drink some coffee in it in the morning.
Okay then. Thanks again, Ruth.
You have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we have Henry, call me back.
Uh-oh. Did you hang up on Henry?
I don't think I hung up on him. I just think
he gave up on us, huh?
Yeah, I think he did. But he'll call back in a minute.
It's like they're talking about genealogy. I don't care about that.
Genealogy. I want to talk about cowboys, damn it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the 1890 census was actually stored in a warehouse, I think in St. Louis, if I'm remembering the story right. And the warehouse caught on fire.
I did not know that.
Pretty much all of it's gone. I think they had like a portion of Maine survived. And I had not heard that they took what had survived, just said, well, we don't have the rest of it, so out the door it goes too. But, if you're, you know, I've done genealogy, obviously, because I'm talking about it, but you get where you're tracing a line, and it's amazing how much they'll take it out.
I got Henry on the phone.
Here he is.
Henry Park.
Yes, indeed. How are you?
Good, my friend. How are you?
I'm just peachy. Thank you.
You're on with Richard Polinelli tonight, and he'll be. You can actually meet him at the Cowboy Festival.
I'm looking forward to it.
Good.
And I'm sorry, what was this census that all got burned up? What year was
1890.
That? 1890.
For the whole country?
For the whole country.
Apparently.
Oh, my goodness. I never heard about that. That's kind of terrifying.
Hey, that's an article for True West, isn't it?
There you go.
It certainly is. Well, hey, it's great to be on with you gentlemen.
Oh,
and
always
I have
a pleasure.
To admit, I haven't got too much news to share. The
okay.
fact is, since I was on with you two Thursdays ago,
right.
I've been so busy with articles for True West, I haven't yet posted all the things I talked about then.
Okay.
But I will be posting this Sunday, and there are some things I did want to make sure folks were aware of that are coming up.
Okay.
First off, the TCM Classic Film Festival begins a week from today, which is Thursday, April 6th, in and around the Hollywood Chinese Theater. And I'm happy to say that they have added more Westerns and Western interest type films than originally announced.
Uh-huh.
On Thursday night at 6, they're showing a new documentary, Dawson City, Frozen Time. Back at the turn of the 20th century, in the middle of the Yukon Gold Rush, Dawson was the last stop for movie prints that had been shipped from town to town to town across the country.
Uh-huh.
What, you know, no one ever thought it was worth the expense of shipping them back to L.A., so more than 500 reels of film, tons of them Westerns, several about the Gold Rush, were used as landfill under a skating rink.
Oh, my God.
But
are
the
you
land
serious?
Was so cold, the permafrost preserved all of these thought-to-be-lost movies.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
And so there are these things, William S. Hart films, Lionel Barrymore, Lon Chaney, Douglas Fairbanks, Harold Lloyd, all sorts of people, all sorts of films that they thought were lost, and they have them now.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
So yeah, they're going to be able to restore them and get them back on?
That's right. They're, well, there are clips from quite a few of them.
Uh-huh.
And what is it? The Darkening Trail. It's a well-known William S. Hart that was thought to be lost. And I know that came out of there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there are quite a few others. And that same day, Thursday at 7, they have the Great Nickelodeon Show, which is all about the earliest days of movies when short films were played as part of vaudeville acts.
Right.
And if it's a, the write-up is a little confusing, but I think this presentation is a mix of film and live performance.
Uh-huh.
And at about 9 o'clock that night, they're premiering a very rarely seen Western musical, the first 3D musical ever, Those Redheads from Seattle. And it stars Agnes Moorehead as the mother of four beautiful daughters, no cracks, including Rhonda Fleming, who brings her four beautiful daughters to the Gold Rush in Dawson.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't that a wonderful synergy?
Yeah,
and
I think so.
Gene Barry and Guy Mitchell.
Oh, my
and,
God.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is Friday Barry. Night. That is not Thursday night. That one. Saturday morning starts off at 9 with a screening of Howard Hawks' Red River at the Egyptian.
Love that movie.
Nice movie.
I think it's the best movie about cowboys and cattle drives ever made.
I think you're probably very close to being right on.
Right. Oh, and I said something wrong last time I was on. Mistakenly thought they were going to be showing the Marx Brothers in Go West.
Uh-huh.
It's actually going to be Laurel and Hardy in their Gold Rush comedy. Yes, there is a theme apparently to this, Way Out West. It's a wonderful film. There, Dick Cavett's going to be introducing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, he's like
and
6 years older than Jesus.
And I just learned something interesting about
pretty
that.
Much.
There's a scene where they sing the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia,
uh-huh.
and Stan sings part of it bass, and it's clearly not his voice.
Uh-huh.
But what later to be nominated for an Oscar actor voices it for him? Any guesses?
No.
I'm
Jill Wills.
Get out of here.
Wow.
Yep. Wasn't he Francis the Talking Mule?
That's the guy.
Yeah.
He's Francis and he's Stan.
Oh, my God. How cool.
Isn't that weird?
It is.
A busy man with in the movies for not showing his face that often.
Oh, I know, huh?
Yeah. Well, now, Sunday morning at 10 at the Egyptian, they'll be screening the new restoration of The Egg and I, starring Fred McMurray and Claudette Colbert as city folks who moved to the sticks to become chicken farmers. It was the unexpected birth of the Ma and Pa Kettle series.
Right, right.
Right, with Marjorie Main and Percy,
Percy Kilbride. Kilbride, right.
Oh, and Fred McMurray's daughter, Kate McMurray, is going to be attending.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Did you know that Marjorie Main's husband, Stanley Krebs, died in 1935, but she always insisted at the studio that there be a seat for him at the studio commissary? and she would talk with him all through lunch.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
That explains a lot.
Interesting lady.
I guess so.
Just as long as she didn't have him cremated and put the ashes in the seat and talk to him.
There you go. That would have been a little strange, yeah.
That suddenly would all make sense.
It would.
Oh, yep. Oh, finally, at about 2 p.m. on Sunday, they'll be showing a new documentary, Republic Preserved. Paramount Pictures now owns Republic Pictures Film Library, and they've been restoring it. And they've got clips from many of their westerns, you know, John Wayne and Roy Rogers things, serials, and all sorts of British quota things and movies that have not been seen since the original release.
Wow.
That ought to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Republic was big in their day.
Oh, they sure were. They're huge.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, do you know how Republic was formed?
I have no idea.
It was quite a story. The guy who ran it, Herbert Yates, ran the company called Consolidated Film Laboratories. And all the Poverty Row companies like Astor and Tiffany and Monogram used him to make their prints. Uh-huh. And they were always terribly behind on paying him. One day, he called in everyone's markers. When they couldn't pay, he took over all their property, combined those companies, and called it Republic Pictures.
Makes sense.
Yeah, a few years later, the people who had run Monogram were able to pay off their debts and get out and continue as their own studio. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's how he did it. And they went on forever. They were still doing all the prints of Bonanza.
Oh, really?
You know, well into the 70s, yeah.
Holy crap.
And the lab's still around.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also want to say Tuesday, April 18th, at the Autry, it's A Word on Westerns, Robert Word's presentation about Western history and movies, and you also can pick up a good lunch there. And his topic this time is great Western TV movies and miniseries.
Okay.
So they're going to be talking about The Sacketts, Lonesome Dove, Crossfire Trail, Yuma, Conagher, The Gambler series, Kung Fu, all sorts of interesting shows like that. And I know his guests are going to include Jeff Ostersage, who is in a lot of the Louis L'Amour ones,
right,
and Stephanie Powers.
Oh, wow.
Of course, in McClintock, and also in the remake of Stagecoach, which just came out on Blu-ray with Courtney Joyner and I doing audio commentary.
Right, I read that.
How many times has that movie
And, of course, we can't
remade?
Forget the Santa Clarita Cowboy Three. Festival, April 19th through the 23rd.
Right.
Right.
Correct.
And you know what? You can read about all of that and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Oh, cool. Thanks, Henry.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Have a good one.
We'll be talking to you soon, bud. Thanks.
You too.
Thanks.
Henry Park, Henry's Western Roundup.
That is amazing about finding all that film after all those years.
Oh, my God, isn't that? Isn't that? I need to let you know, next week we have on the Writer's Block Lynette Grace Powell, whose book Keep Walking is a little inspirational novelette. She's going to be fascinating to talk to. And week following, on the 13th, is Joe Harrington and Mary Kay. They'll be at, they're doing a show at the theater in Newhall with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell on the 19th. And then they're going to be on the show. And Joe is such a great guest. And then I've never met Mary Kay, but I'm looking forward to having a little conversation with her as well. Thank you for coming in, Richard. It was excellent having you on the show.
Hey, it was fun being over here in this chair instead of that one over there with that mic that doesn't like me.
There you go. That's the one. And with that, I'm going to say we're going to wrap up another Thursday evening here on LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block. We'll be back next Thursday, 7 o'clock Pacific. Tune in and join and find out what our other 300,000 listeners really are digging. Have a good evening. We are out of here.